Hi, I'm Curious City contributor Jessica Popovac. Outsiders often associate Chicago with famous people like Al Capone, Michael Jordan, the Obamas. But for some, there's another name that comes to mind.
Swami Vivekananda, who came to Chicago.
We only identified Chicago with Vivekananda. There was no other connotation of Chicago for us.
Because Chicago and Vivekananda now has become synonyms. If you go and reach India and say that I'm from Chicago, you'll see their eyes, they're laughing. Oh, you're from Chicago. They all know Chicago.
And that was true for Mihir Patel, who moved to Chicago 20 years ago from India. He says that back home, kids learn about Vivekananda's life and teachings in the same way we might learn about Abraham Lincoln in the U.S. That's because Vivekananda, around the turn of the century, introduced Hinduism to the West and instilled a sense of pride in the Indian people that helped inspire the movement for independence from British rule. And the key turning point in his life story took place here in Chicago when he delivered a historic speech at the World's Columbian Exposition.
It was an inspiring story. So from my high school, I had a dream in the sense I was hoping, like, someday I may like to visit that place where Vivekananda gives speech, where he has shaken up the world.
And so when Mihir had the opportunity to attend college here, he took it. And soon after his arrival, he wanted to go to the exact spot where Vivekananda gave his speech in what is now the Art Institute of Chicago. And as he approached the grand entrance on Michigan Avenue, he looked up and saw a street sign that read Swami Vivekananda Way.
Oh, wow. The master's name over here. And after 100 years, that sign is here. Come on, right?
For 20 years, every time Mihir was nearby, he'd go visit the sign. Many Indian immigrants and travelers do the same. They go to the Art Institute to see the place where Swami Vivekananda spoke and take a photo with the brown honorary sign that bears his name. But then one day last fall, as Mihir approached the usual spot, the sign was gone.
And I was like, wow, that sign is not there? And I was like, hold on.
Was it stolen? Was it deliberate? He turned around and walked away, but he kept thinking about it. And so he came to Curious City to find out what happened.
So I thought, okay, you know what? This is a good program, WB Easy Head. I'm curious.
So today, we're going to try to answer Mihir's question by tracing the broader history of Chicago's honorary street signs. And we're going to learn more about who this man was and the impact he had in Chicago and beyond. Because after all, that is the purpose of our honorary street signs, to remember the people who have made their mark on this city, beyond the big names. Stay with us.
Think on your feet for our Fast and Curious 5K, a one-of-a-kind race hosted by WBEZ and the Chicago Sun-Times on Saturday, July 27th at Humboldt Park. More info and early bird registration at wbez.org/events.
In my search for answers about what happened to Swami Vivekananda Way, I started by looking into the honorary sign system. Here's how it works. New signs are proposed by the aldermen and are approved, or not, by the Transportation Committee before going to the full council. Then the Department of Transportation creates and installs new signs. But I found it surprisingly difficult to find anything about the status of specific signs. The city clerk's office didn't have much information. The original alderman who proposed the sign passed away in 2020, and the current alderman's office didn't know what I was talking about. I reached out to the Department of Transportation, but they told me they don't keep any centralized list of honorary streets or keep track of the signs they've created, including Swami Vivekananda's. Their spokesperson suggested I reach out to the folks behind a website called Honorary Chicago. I learned that it was started by a woman named Linda Zabers. She's not a city employee, but she's been keeping better tabs on this than anyone else I could find.
I started just out of my own curiosity, and I started looking them up, and I found some really terrific stories. To me, it really became a study in the contemporary history of Chicago, but it's not easy to find information.
No kidding. She spent more than a decade now piecing it all together between online research, library collections, and tips.
I get people who contact me saying, hey, my aunt had a sign, let me tell you about her. Uber drivers actually have been very helpful too.
She's collected the information on her website and in a book she published back in 2015.
They are in every neighborhood, in every ward, and I certainly don't have information on the histories of all of the signs, and I probably never will.
She says the largest group of honorees are clergy, but there are also many educators, coaches, musicians.
People from all walks of life who have made an impact, who did things for their neighborhood. So the neighborhoods actually decide who their heroes are.
So I'm curious, do they just leave the signs there forever, or are there reasons why they might be taken down at some point?
So the answer usually isn't because the sign was necessarily removed or taken down. What did happen, though, is the rules for honorary signs were changed.
That was in 2017. The city council put more restrictions on the signs after aldermen approved more than 100 in a single year. Today, aldermen are limited to proposing 2 new signs per year. They need to pay for them out of their ward budgets, and they can only be used to honor people who are no longer living. Also, if an existing sign isn't submitted for approval again every 5 years, it can be removed. However, the Department of Transportation told me that they aren't proactively taking any signs down.
Well, what's more likely to happen is these signs get put up. There's really no record of them since they're not an official street address. No one's really watching them, except me. And buildings go up, scaffolding goes up, the sign is in the way, it gets taken down, it gets forgotten.
She suspects that's probably what happened to Princess Diana's sign in Streeterville and Oprah Winfrey's sign in the West Loop. Both were in places that have seen a lot of development in recent years, and both have unceremoniously disappeared. Of course, it's also possible that they were just stolen and never replaced. But they are always putting up new signs. Last year, aldermen approved 51 new honorary street signs, according to council records.
My work is cut out for me. I'll never be done.
But she says she has no intention of quitting anytime soon.
I have learned so much about how amazing the city is and the people who live here, the people who have come through here, that people from really all walks of life made a difference. And we share the same city and the same history. And you feel the connection your listener felt when seeing the Swami Vivekananda sign.
And of all the hundreds of signs she's researched and documented, she says Swami Vivekananda Way has always been one of her favorites.
This is case in point of an inspiring story that led me down this whole road. Because you walk down Michigan Avenue, you're standing out in front of the Art Institute of Chicago, you look up, you see the sign that says Swami Vivekananda Way. And I just went, what? Who? Why?
And after the break, we'll answer those questions. And we'll go inside the Art Institute to learn more about Swami Vivekananda, how he rose to honorary street sign status, and what happened to that sign.
Think on your feet for our Fast and Curious 5K, a one-of-a-kind race hosted by WBEZ and the Chicago Sun-Times on Saturday, July 27th at Humboldt Park. More info and early bird registration at wbez.org/events.
This WBEZ podcast is supported by Ravinia, with over 100 concerts under the stars this summer, including Daryl Hall and Elvis Costello, Norah Jones with special guest Mavis Staples, The Beach Boys with special guest John Stamos, Shaggy and TLC, Jason Isbell and the 400 Unit, the Chicago Symphony Orchestra, and more. Their 30-acre park is nestled in a gently wooded area. Bring your own picnic or eat at one of the park restaurants. Tickets available now only at ravinia.org.
Before continuing my search for answers about the Swami Vivekananda street sign, I wanted to better understand why a portion of Michigan Avenue was named for him in the first place. So I went to the Art Institute of Chicago. The original building was used for the World's Fair. There, organizers hosted a series of international convenings for almost a year before the building was turned over to become the permanent home of the Art Institute. The Parliament of World Religions is perhaps the most famous among them. Inside the main entrance, just to the left of the grand staircase, there's a little alcove I've probably passed a dozen times before without noticing. There's a bronze plaque with an image of Swami Vivekananda, and it says, Sisters and Brothers of America. There are also doors that open into a giant auditorium.
Hello.
I'm in Fullerton Hall with Dr. Madhvanti Ghosh. She's been a curator at the Art Institute for almost 2 decades. I asked her to meet me in the exact spot where Swami Vivekananda spoke during his historic visit to Chicago.
And this is the original space where the inaugural session of the World Parliament actually took place.
The morning of September 11th, 1893, the building bustled with about 7,000 religious leaders and spectators from around the world.
You would have seen delegations dressed in different clothing, representing the different religions from across the world, even though they were a minority, because the whole idea was celebrating, you know, America. This was America's moment, right?
And Chicago.
And Chicago, exactly.
There was a definite emphasis on Christianity. The organizing committee was mostly Christian and every morning opened with the Lord's Prayer. Still, it was the first time in history that leaders from 10 major world religions had gathered together, and it was very progressive for the time.
But amongst all of these people who had been invited, Vivekananda was an unknown monk who did not come by invitation.
He just traveled across the ocean and around the world to see if he could crash the parliament.
Precisely, because he didn't realize that you had to have a formal invitation.
But the parliament was creating a lot of buzz, and Vivekananda's popularity was growing in India, particularly among the elite. His followers included several wealthy rajas who offered to pay for his trip. It took him nearly 2 months on a series of boats and trains.
And only then to discover that you needed a formal invitation to attend.
Whoops.
Whoops, exactly. And he had arrived in July, and the World Parliament wasn't opening till September.
Did he know that it wasn't happening until September?
I guess he didn't. Or he didn't realize how expensive it was going to be. So, I mean, how was he going to live for, you know, those many months?
But during his travels, he had met a nice older woman on her way to Boston. She had told him casually, you know, if you're ever in Boston, look me up. And he actually did. She welcomed him and introduced him to several Harvard professors.
And he impressed all of them. One of them happened to know the president of the World Parliament and wrote him a glowing letter of introduction.
Well, isn't that convenient?
Amazing. I mean, these are some of the things that happened to him.
Ghosh said that his Boston friends sprang for a train ticket to help him get back to Chicago. He eventually found his way to the parliament. The opening day was a long one, with speaker after speaker and the occasional Christian hymn.
All the great and the good had spoken first.
Swami Vivekananda wrote later that he was in an almost meditative state when the chairman of the parliament gave him a chance to speak. Now, leading up to the big event, no one quite knew how things would go. Some religious leaders had declined their invitations. They thought the topic of religion was too divisive and that engaging in interfaith conversations like this would suggest that they weren't fully committed to their own traditions and beliefs. And even though everyone who made it to Chicago had gathered in the spirit of unity, there were still key differences that would flare up throughout the event. And knowing this, Swami Vivekananda stepped to the podium.
And he got up and he, for a moment, was silent. And then he launched into Sisters and Brothers of America.
Here's a rendition of the speech from Satchidananda Ashram, Yogaville.
Sisters and Brothers of America.
And he talks about universal, as he calls it, toleration.
We believe not only in universal toleration, but we accept all religions as true.
He quoted a Hindu hymn.
As the different streams, having their sources in different places, all mingle their water in the sea, so, O Lord, the different paths which men take through different tendencies, various though they appear, crooked or straight, all lead to thee.
And he talks about the importance of dialogue between faiths, also essentially establishes how South Asia over many centuries had been the place of refuge for people from all over the world who were, you know, running away from discrimination in different lands.
He condemned all the ways that religion has historically been used as an excuse to exclude and persecute.
Sectarianism, bigotry, and its horrible descendant, fanaticism, have long possessed this beautiful earth. They have filled the earth with violence, drenched it often and often with human blood, destroyed civilization, and sent whole nations to despair. Had it not been for these horrible...
And he spoke of the oneness of all religions and all gods, quoting the Gita.
Whosoever comes to me, through whatsoever form, I reach him. All men are struggling through paths which in the end lead to me.
That is the foundation of the Hindu faith, a religion that before this day had been viewed in the West as backwards, black magic. But here he was, telling all of these religious leaders from throughout the US, Europe, and the world that they all worshipped the same God, that they were all part of the same divine existence.
So he really establishes Hinduism on a platform, in a way, in a particular language that was accessible to his audience.
And I fervently hope that the bell that tolled this morning in honor of this convention may be the death knell of all fanaticism, of all persecutions with the sword or with the pen, and of all uncharitable feelings between persons wending their way to the same goal.
He received a standing ovation, and he went on for the next 3 years to travel the country, always based in Chicago, and always sharing the teachings of Vedanta, his particular school of Hinduism.
So he spoke many times after that, but it's just that this speech became the hit of the day, the one that everybody remembers.
After the parliament, Swami Vivekananda was in high demand. The Chicago Daily Tribune reported that when he walked the streets of Chicago, he was followed by crowds and would stop and deliver lectures. He held a series of classes at what is now the Auditorium Building, spoke at the University of Chicago in Hull House, and at dozens of smaller gatherings of churches and homes in Chicago, Evanston, and throughout the region. He went home to India in 1897 and made an impact there, too, reminding the Indian people of their own inherent divinity, telling them of his reception in Chicago, and stoking a sense of pride that had been squelched during decades of colonialism.
When he had his great moment in Chicago, this was at the depths of, you know, colonial bondage for Indians. And the fact that his speech got reported all the way back to the colonies, it gave a tremendous sense of pride to Indians. And the nationalist struggle really started after that. And that makes Chicago, I believe, one of the most important places for every Indian and Indian American to come and just visit this place.
He returned to the U.S. a few years later and established several Vedanta Society centers. There are now two in the Chicago area, a large campus in Homer Glen and another called the House of Harmony in Chicago's Old Irving Park neighborhood. Today, our region is home to the second largest Indian population in the country. For the centennial of the World Parliament, community leaders gathered to celebrate. They wanted to remind Chicago of Swami Vivekananda's visit and his teachings. And Ghosh says that's where the idea for the honorary street sign was born. Alderman Bert Nateras introduced the resolution in September of 1995, and it passed unanimously. The unveiling included floats with large images of Vivekananda. Local dignitaries gathered alongside a huge crowd in front of the Art Institute, where members of the Vedanta Society led prayers for peace. The sign was placed on the lamppost right at the bottom of the stairs leading up to the museum at Adams in Michigan. That's the spot Mihir, a question asker, has visited many times over the past 20 years. And when I left the Art Institute, I saw it was true what Mihir said. The sign wasn't there. But down the street, at the corner of Monroe and Michigan, I saw it, clear as day, Swami Vivekananda Way. Of course, no one knows why it was moved or when or by whom, but it is still there, just in a slightly less prominent spot, still giving Indian and Indian American visitors a reason to feel at home in Chicago and connected to our city's history.
It has become the most important site of pilgrimage outside of South Asia.
And the sign and others like it serve another purpose, to help raise questions in the minds of people who don't know the story, maybe even inspiring the occasional passerby to learn more about the city's history and some of the exceptional people who came before us.
Thanks to Jessica Popovac for reporting this week's episode. Hey, Curious City listeners. The long-form podcast you've enjoyed each week will be changing, but stay with us. Curious City will still be here in a shorter format starting in June. Over the past few weeks, many of you shared what you enjoyed about the Curious City podcast. Here are just a few.
My name is R.C. Jones, and what I loved most about Curious City was when the reporters and the question askers would go on adventures together to uncover answers. In my case, I got to ride the L with reporter Sean Kennedy, who told me why the trains have such twisty, turny routes.
I love listening to the podcast with my kids in the car. We all got to learn a little bit more about the city, like the Dojo Wars. It's very entertaining.
My favorite Curious City ever is Jesse Duke's work on the Loop Flood of 1992. The way he tells this story and the hilarious clips that are included from Leary Langford do indeed make this the most Chicago story ever.
Hello, this is Jesse, listener and definitely a friend of Curious City. I think the thing I love most is that we get to meet a lot of people who we would not meet on the radio or in other news outlets. Maybe because they asked a question, or maybe because they have some connection to the answer of that question. Not newsworthy, but still interesting, noteworthy, worth knowing.
Thanks to R.C. Jones, Sophia Kim, Jen Peterson, and Jesse Dukes. If you want to share your favorite memories, send a short voice memo to curiouscity@wbez.org. Curious City is a production of WBEZ Chicago and is part of the NPR network. The show is produced by Jason Mark and Joe Dassault. Maggie Civet is the digital and engagement producer. I'm editor Susie Ahn. Thanks for listening.
Hi, it's Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We bring you in-depth, long-form interviews with actors, directors, musicians, authors, journalists, and more. Listen to our Peabody Award-winning Fresh Air podcast from WHYY and NPR.
WBEZ is launching a new weekly arts newsletter. It's called The Green Room. And each Thursday, you get our picks for what's happening in Chicago, on stage, in galleries, and behind the scenes. Subscribe at wbez.org/greenroom.